Blog Talk Radio.
I am celebrating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are
live! Hello and welcome to another edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am, of course, the host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. You can also find the show at HIAC Talk Radio on Twitter and on Facebook and HIACTalkRadio.com. And with me, as always, is the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico.
Hey, follow me on Twitter at DanWall83 and The Monday Night Show. Obey the Puck, follow us at Obey Puck Show.
And with us, as well as our MMA and wrestling analyst, it is Omega Squad Chris Green. How are you this week, Chris?
I am just fantastic. Hello, interested parties. Follow me at Twitter, at Omega Squad.
And here he is, of course. He is one of Chikara's standouts. He's also the producer of Kaju Big Battle. It is none other than Jolly Roger. Jolly, how are you doing here tonight?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I just wanted to start out with an easy one. Throw you the softball. That's how we do things here. Now, here's the softball question. It's right down the middle for you. Why did you decide to become a pro wrestler?
It's something my brother and I loved growing up. You know, we'd sit in my parents' living room just watching, you know, old WWF and Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and everybody. And then it obviously evolved to crazy backyard wrestling where our ring was made out of, like, six mattresses on top of each other. And then eventually we just started going to school. And then the first school we went to was shit. And then we found Chikara, and Chikara became our home.
What was the turning point where you decided this is definitely what I want to do? I need to find a good school.
I think it was during our backyard days where we would just sit around there and be like, oh man, would it be great to actually do this stuff and just in front of people and everything like that. Then we would have some people from the neighborhood actually come to our backyard shows and watch our backyard shows, and it was god awful, you know. we would actually walk around our neighborhood just finding like doors, like a like wooden doors that people were throwing away, or like sheetrock and stuff like that, and using that as tables and going through them and stuff like that. Backyard wrestling.
Yeah, backyard wrestling is fun. no, thank you. That's stories for another time. Never mind.
Yeah. From what I've seen, we were kind of tame.
What's the material? I've been hit with a piece of plexiglass before. That was fun. What was the week one, week two in the school? What was the first thing you noticed you picked up where you started going, oh, I got this. I'm starting to learn. What was it? When did you first notice that?
Well, like with Chikara's regimen, you learn a lot of the lucha roles first. And, you know, like myself and my brother were always pretty athletic, so we got those down pretty easy. Some things are obviously harder. You got to really, you know, once you get the mechanics down, it gets a little easier and everything like that. But we were picking things up not too bad, you know, pretty quick. And then, you know, the bumping and bumping, you know, when you first start bumping, that shit sucks. And then, you know, eventually you get used to it. You learn how to, you know, to breathe when you fall and all the right ways to do everything. And it's pretty easy. It's pretty fun. And once we got starting, you know, actually being able to do more and more, that's when it started getting funner.
Please, go ahead. Continue.
Like, before we went to Chikara, we started out at another place in New Jersey, and it was one of those federations that the guy, he made this federation because it was the height of indie wrestling at the time. Like, Austin was the big guy, and he was doing shows every weekend, but I don't think he was ever anybody special. So he decided to make his own federation and be the big fish in a small pond. So he was their world champion and all this stuff. And then, like, we, just by going through that, you know, their promotion with him, it was really shitty, you know? It's one of those guys, like, he's just, everything revolved around him. You'll never be able to find this match anywhere, I hope. But there was a tag match with my brother and myself on the opposite sides and two other guys right before the main event, and the match was really good. I'm not going to say, like, it's great, but it was good for that federation, you know? And enjoyed it. And as people enjoyed it, and then the main event went on, and after the match, he came to the back flipping out and screaming and yelling at us. He called my brother a green little bastard and said, your job before the main event was to go out there like the Divas do before WrestleMania and kill the crowd and let the main event happen. And, you know, that's something I decided, like, from the start, that every time I go out there, I'm never just going to, like, take it easy. I'm going to give the best I can because people are coming. They're paying their money to see, maybe not to see myself, but they're coming to see wrestling, and I want to give them good wrestling, and I want to give them a memory to go home with. So that's how I've always felt in wrestling. And there are some people where you go to shows and it's like, the crowd's light, we'll go easy tonight, let's not bump. Fuck that, man. The crowd's easy tonight. Well, you have a smaller crowd, that means we have less people. We have less people that can, we have a better opportunity to connect with that short amount of people. You know, now we can give all those kids in the crowd something to actually go home with. Like, now we have, you know, really focal points to interact with and, you know, give people a good show. Small crowd, big crowd, I don't care. I'm always going to give you everything I got.
So how long was it when you that you were in the Chikara school before someone approached you, and how did they approach you to actually be on your first card?
When we got there, Reckless Youth, he was there for a little while, then he just left. So Mike Quackenbush was running the whole school. It took since we already had prior training, it didn't take as long as expected to get on a show, but, you know, we still had to learn their style, their way. and all the, you know, the new stuff that we were learning, like all the roles and the lucha arm drags, and just all the different styles that Chikara teaches. And, you know, we became better wrestlers, obviously, because of this. And so it was probably maybe a good, like, 3 or 4 months before my brother and, like, Kingston and them got on the show, and maybe, like, a good 5 or 6, maybe even more for myself. Because for a while, we lost the building that we were working in the beginning, so we had to find a new building. So that took a little while, too.
Yeah.
Where did in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Where did you come up with the gimmick of being a pirate? Because that's, you don't see it too often. I mean, there was Paul Burchill, of course, but where did you come up with the Jolly Roger? Where did that all come from? Was that your first gimmick, or is this something that came later on?
Well, the beauty of Chikara is they give you basically your gimmick. They tell you what you're going, you know, or what he would like you to do. He gives you everything. But it's your job to go out there and make it your own. So I made it fun. I made it the party pirate, as, you know. So I had a good time doing that. I made it my own. I wasn't just going out there being a pirate, because I knew if I went out there being a pirate as a 17-year-old, you know, it might not get over that great, but going out there and being a pirate who is also myself, you know, and having fun the way I have fun and, you know, interacting with the crowd and getting the crowd to have fun, I knew I could do that. It wasn't the first idea thrown at me. I did not like the first idea at all. I was a mask guy, and I did not want to wear a mask at all. So the first idea went out the way, and then the pirate came and stuff.
Now, did you, this is going to sound it's like we're in acting school, but did you watch any movies or look at anything to get sort of a character down, or did you just take what was in your head and try to go out there with it?
Well, obviously at the time, that's like when the Pirates of the Caribbean movies came out,
mm-hmm.
or maybe the first one, so I definitely, you know, watch that over and over again, trying to get some things down. But I didn't want to go out there and emulate, you know, Jack Sparrow or, you know, Johnny Depp's version of it. You know, I didn't want to be a blatant ripoff of that. So, you know, I watched what I could. I did my studying. I learned almost all the pirate flags. I even have my own now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's on the newer version of my tights. And,
it was a simple makeup to follow when those movies were so big. You just kind of evolved it from that without copying.
Yeah, and like in the Chikara and wrestling is world, I still do the Jolly Roger and the Pirate, but in other places I've kind of branched out from it. I noticed there's a lot more people doing it now, being pirates. So I'm kind of just trying to, you know, like I've taken it very far, and I enjoy what I did with it. And, you know, in the wrestling is in Chikara universe, I still do it. But when I do NYWC, I just go short and like J-Ro, and I'm more of a dick.
Well, that works.
Yeah.
So what are your...
It's fun. It's a change of pace.
It must be refreshing to come out and do something a little different than you're used to keep you a little fresh, yeah.
It is, exactly. It breathed new life into everything I wanted to do. I really started evolving my style more and doing more things. So I'm happy with that.
What are some of your first memories of? Let me rephrase that. I'm sorry. What are some of your memories of your first matches? Were you getting good feedback, or was there still a very long learning curve?
there's still a learning curve. There, like, two of my first matches, one against Blind Rage, who, you know, at that time, he was, you know, the top, besides Quack, one of the top guys in Chikara, and even today, he could still go, but then, like, that's when he was really passionate about wrestling, and that's all he did, and he was just phenomenal, and I feel if he never stopped and he kept with it, he would have been one of those guys that you talk about today and on the indie scenes, like you talk about, like, Kevin Steen and stuff. I feel Brian Rage could have been one of those guys. So that was, like, one of my favorite matches from when I first started. One of my least favorite matches from when I first started was against American Gigolo, who was the handler for Skyda. That was the Toramon and now Dragon Gate. He was a trainer for them. And that was awesome to learn that style from the guy who taught, you know, the Toramon guys and the Dragon Gate guys, not just some guy who learned it, from the actual guy who taught them, you know, who taught Sima and Dragon Kid and all that stuff. This is the guy who taught them. So that was great to learn all this stuff. But he, American Gigolo was his handler, and the two of them would come, and I wound up wrestling American Gigolo. It started with a Tag World Grand Prix, the first one, where we were randomly selected as tag partners, and he walked out on me mid-match. And then we had another match, and he just forgot things. And one of the spots, which I vividly remember, is he was supposed to hip-toss. Well, he did hip-toss me to the outside. Mm-hmm. And I took the hip-toss to the outside. I landed hard, and that's all he remembered. So he kept hip-tossing me to the outside. And he did it, like, three times. And at this time, like, I wasn't that, you know, experience with how to take control of matches and stuff like that and what to actually do. So it was brutal for me. Like, this guy is my senior, and I'm listening to everything he says, and he just keeps hip-tossing me to the outside, and I keep hitting the apron as hard as I can because I wasn't that, you know, like, oh, how do I go to the outside? I'll just throw myself as hard as I can over the top. No, that's not the best way to do it, you know? There are safer ways. So I just kept hitting myself and hurting myself, and it was fun.
Oh, that's fun.
It was fun. It was not fun.
Your reaction to that was the best part.
Yeah, how, it was not fun.
So you went a little while, and you finally get your first win. I believe it was it the Young Lions Cup?
It wasn't Young Lions Cup. It was, I think it was the end of season two. I finally beat or the beginning of season three, where I beat Warshock, and it went into, like, I got the shot into Young Lions Cup two. I think it was that, but it was definitely against Warshock, my first win. And
how did? Go ahead. Sorry. No, please take me through it. Go ahead.
All right, he was. He was in my graduating class at Chikara. I was in class three, and him and I were the only two students that survived class three at Chikara. And so him and I, you know, we worked together a lot, you know, in training and everything like that. So I thought we had some pretty decent matches, I think the three that we had. I think we had three matches overall where he beat me, and then I beat him twice, like the rubber match to finish the series. And I thought him and I worked really well together.
So when you finally, when you're sitting back there, you're getting ready for, you know, the show, and they finally come out to you, okay, all right, you're going over. For your first time, was it just another day at the office, or did it mean something to you, like, I'm finally going to get the three count?
Oh, it's exciting, you know, like, obviously when you get older and you learn more about the business and you do things, you realize that wins and losses, you know, the way wrestling is, it doesn't really matter that much. As long as you go out there and put on a good show. But when it's your first win, you're very excited. Anytime you win, you're very excited because that means someone's got some faith in you and they think that you can, you know, hold your own. So, but yeah, it's exciting. very exciting the first time you win a match. I think anyone will tell you that.
Now, we're going to skip ahead a little bit here. Obviously, there was a little congestion at the – well, congestion's not actually the proper word, but there was shenanigans at the end of the last season of Chikara. There was a hiatus. You're coming back now. Chikara is coming back. What's the feeling amongst everybody now that Chikara is finally back?
Well, I tell you, it's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of excitement going around with everybody. Not much is still known about what's going on or what everyone's doing or who's even on this first show. But from the way the ticket sales have went, which have been great, everyone's just really, really excited to just be back. And I can't see that energy and that, you know, the Easton building. It's a great building to call home there and get a good house. And I have a feeling that all that energy and all that excitement, you know, especially coming off the heels of the National Pro Wrestling Day the way it was,
it's gonna be
damn good and a lot of fun. I have a feeling that everyone's gonna be on high and bring their A game.
Now, do you think with that storyline that went on, do you think some of the casual observers, people that don't really follow, but they know of Chikara, but they don't really follow it, do you think they got confused, kind of lost in the shuffle of all this with the I Am Chikara things going on? Or do you think that this is something that everybody can pick up with? Just your thoughts on that.
I know people who went to that last show, Never Compromise, and it was their first Chikara show. So if that was your very first Chikara show, you have no clue what's going on. And to have to watch all these Ashes videos and all this backstory of all these years and years of meticulous planning that went on for this story that people weren't even a part of, that didn't even realize that this was part of this larger-than-life story. I don't think people realized what was going on when things were happening. It was definitely hard to follow. Honestly, I feel like there was the hardcore Chikara faithfuls really knew what was going on. And if you came in the fold in the last 2 to 3 years, you might have been confused, or you could have, it wasn't. But I think they gave you enough information during the time lapse to really pick up on everything and follow. I know a lot of people were upset. Some people saying they'll never watch Chikara again. But, you know, those emotions that people are feeling and people are saying, those are good emotions to have because
true.
It just means people cared and they invested so much into the company that they were actually kind of hurt when it was gone. And I'm pretty sure nothing was meant to hurt anybody, you know, when they were leaving, but I'm pretty sure it was just, you know, it was for a good story, and the story's still going on.
Yeah, we certainly don't know where it's going to lead. We just saw that huge battle at the end of, almost the end of National Pro Wrestling Day. So certainly more to come with that.
I think the next few months, especially this first show, are going to be really exciting.
That's good to hear. Now, another question I have. I read this article. I'm not too familiar with the guy that wrote it. I just saw that it popped up in my news feed today, and it said, Chikara, it's a terrible company. It exposes the business.
Oh, Chikara's back. ... to exposing the business.
So you're familiar with the article. Okay, very good.
Yes,
now,
it was forwarded to me by a lovely lady with purple hair.
Oh, I got you. But now, this article, I'm just wondering, you as someone in Chikara and has been there for quite some time, I mean, what do you take away from... now, this guy, you can even see that he's not really a fan. He's not even a casual fan. He's just a guy that made up his mind about Chikara. And he doesn't like the product. I mean, how do you feel about something like that? That type of criticism.
I don't know if he's like another worker who, because you know, there's workers who have their blogs and stuff like that who try to do both. And I think if you are a worker who's trying to do both, you can't do that. You have to be, you know, partial one way or the other. Now, if you're an owner and you have blogs, I think that may be a little different, you know. Because
or a commentator.
Or a commentator. Yeah. Commentators, you know, obviously that's part of your job. But I think workers need to be more, what's the word I'm looking for? More biased, I guess. I guess that he is a worker. Because I know there was that photo up top of a guy in tights. So I don't know if that was, you know, him or somebody else. I really couldn't see it. I looked at it on my phone. But, yeah, it's just, like, I think if you're a worker and you're writing blogs and bashing other companies and other wrestlers, that's not going to get you far at all in the business.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I do feel like it was someone who's bitter about it and doesn't understand it. Like, I even know Lance Storm really doesn't like Chikara much because it's goofy and comic booky and cartoony. But who's to say that, you know, this universe that Chikara has created with all these characters can't coexist with a universe like, you know, Ring of Honor or CZW or, you know, even PWG, who's also wacky at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, who's to say that these two universes can't coexist? You know, there are crossovers. You know, the Ants break out. They do a lot of other companies. Jigsaw breaks out. He does a lot of other companies. A lot of guys break out. They might not do the same character that they do in Chikara, but there are guys who, you know, travel the indies and do pretty well because they are good wrestlers. Two of the things I remember on it were, one, someone saying that you can't believe Eddie Kingston as a thug. Like, he's not a believable thug. And as someone who has known Eddie Kingston for near 15 years now, there is not someone who is more thug than that man from Yonkers, New York. I've known Eddie since I was a 15-year-old kid, and he has been the realest person I have ever met, and probably one of the truest friends I've ever had, too. Will have your back in the drop of a hat, but I would never, ever want to cross him or get on his bad side. You know? So to write that he's not believable as a thug is laughable.
I've worked a few shows with Eddie, and I can back up that claim that you just made. Now, moving on, you're also the producer of Kaiju Big Battle. Now, if people don't like Chikara, they're definitely not going to like Kaiju Big Battle.
Like Kaiju Big Battle. Yeah, my involvement with Kaiju happened like four years ago now, maybe even longer than that. It's not as big as it used to be, I know I still have on my Twitter that I was a producer, but I say my role has dropped a lot. I don't do as much as I used to do anymore. And that's because someone else came over and they have a better vision and they're making things a lot better. So it's okay to take a back seat there. And I'm happy with that. I still do a lot there, but not as much as I used to. But, yeah, if you don't like Chikara, then you'll never understand Kaiju.
Now, explain to the listeners that might not be familiar with Kaiju Big Battle what exactly Kaiju Big Battle is.
If you like Chikara, you'll love Kaiju. If you like Godzilla movies and monsters and destroying buildings, you'll love Kaiju. But if you're going to a Kaiju show expecting, like, A-list match of the year wrestling, you're in the wrong place. If you're expecting a good time and having, you know, fun and fan interaction and everything, that's what you want, then you're going to Kaiju and you're going to have a good time. Now, not to say that there's not good wrestling on Kaiju, there is. but those costumes are very limiting, and it's hard to it's hard to get those monsters to move around and do all the things that we can do. So yeah, if you're looking at me, I know a lot of people who go to kaiju who don't watch wrestling at all. They just they just like kaiju a lot because it's fun. It's different. I mean, it's like a comedy show. You go, you laugh, you have a good time. You might connect with some of the characters, and you also might get angry at some of the outcomes, which I think it was the outcome of last year's WrestleCon, where the match ended with a gun, like the lights went out, you heard a gunshot, and both Dr. Cube and American Beetle were laid out, and the Kaiju Championship was stolen. So I know a lot of people were mad at that ending. They were throwing things into the ring and everything like that. And that, you gotta understand, like, it's a story. There's more to the story, and more of the story has come out in over a year. There is a Dr. Cube running around, but he seems kind of off. He doesn't seem as maniacal and devious. And American Beetle hasn't been seen since. It's been almost a year. The Kaiju Grand Championship was later found. It was stolen by the gambling bug. And now Steam Power Tentacle Boulder is holding it. And I know that name sounds really hard. And just to understand what Steam Power Tentacle Boulder is, he is a boulder that is steam-powered with tentacle arms.
Well, that pretty much wraps it up for me, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much what's settled in the name.
He's in the name. You know, he's the big guy. He has a huge undefeated streak in Kaiju. He's better than Goldberg, let's just say.
Well, that's not saying much, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
All right, now... I do have another question for you, and this deals with NYWC. You recently debuted there. How's things going in NYWC?
Well, I've been there for over a year now, I think. I think December 2012 was my debut for NYWC. So it's been over a year. Things are going great right now. I'm currently on a huge winning streak. In the last 3 months, I've beaten TNA superstar Jesse Neal, and then I also beat some other guy who used to wrestle for TNA by the name of Rubix or Jigsaw. And last month, I beat a guy out of Ohio named Chris Stark, the Alpha Breed Chris Stark, who... You know, they're all hard-fought matches, but I've come out on top in every single one. And I'm posed to keep my winning streak going this month at Aftermath on the 22nd.
Did you catch an extra buzz getting in the ring with somebody who just came off, even though it's not WWE TV, but coming off somebody who just got off of Impact TV to make the match feel a little better? Especially beating Jigsaw, I mean.
Well, with Jigsaw, like, you know, he brings his A-game every time. Every time he's in the ring, he brings his A-game. So having the wrestle, the very first singles match I've ever had with Jigsaw was a lot of fun and very competitive. You know, it was very hard-hitting. We've obviously known each other forever. And it's just, we beat the hell out of each other. And with Jesse Neal, like, he learned from, you know, the Dudleys. And so to listen to what he had to say and, you know, whatever extra knowledge he learned from, like, the guys like the Dudleys or just being in the TNA locker room with a lot of advanced guys, it was good. It was a good learning experience. I had a lot of fun doing both those matches.
Hey, before we go, I got a message from a certain somebody who said if you didn't mention them, they would take all your Batman toys away.
I did mention her already. I said the purple haired girl I date, all right?
She wanted a little more love.
She wants a little more love. I currently date this little tiny girl, named Chrissy Rivera, out of CZW and NYWC as well. She was actually one of the second or third, I don't know, second girl to ever be in the Psycho Circus. And,
yeah, I heard about that.
Don't take my Batman toys away. I'm a huge geek and nerd. If you come to my house, you'll think that I have like small children, but I live by myself. Yeah, you're like, oh, how many kids do you have? And I'll be like, none. I have zero kids. These toys are all mine.
Yeah. Believe me, I know the feeling.
All these video games, all these stuff are mine. They're all, you know, all those Ninja Turtle glasses, those are mine. But I'm more adult. I also have Ninja Turtle shot glasses, so you know that I'm an adult as well. You know? There's some drinking that goes on there.
Now, that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to wrap things up. Ninja Turtle shot glasses. Now, where can people find you, follow you, figure out what you're doing in this wacky world of wrestling?
You can follow me on Twitter, which is Jero_Chikara. I have an email, which is JeroChikara@gmail.com. And ProWrestlingTees.com/JollyRoger. I'll hope to have some new stuff on there soon. I've just been really lazy about it. You know, like if you follow any of the wrestling isms or you follow NYWC, those are mostly what I do. I want to do some other companies. With the way my actual shoot job is, it's hard to do things. I really don't travel that much because of it. Mm. But there are some things locally that I would like to do, and if you listen and you're local in, like, the tri-state Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey area, Connecticut, you know, email me and we'll discuss things.
That sounds good. I hope it works out. Jolly Roger, J. Rowe, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you, guys. And now I get to go to the gym.
All right. Enjoy the gym, but you have a great night.
All right. You guys, too. Thank you for having me on.
Tell you what, I was looking forward to this episode because of the music involved in the episode.
Yeah.
That's Dust to Dust by the Misfits. Wow, that's a nice one. And later on,
that's
a special
stuff.
Surprise for anyone, because Major McClendon has a great one too, Dan.
Ooh. Sometimes the music makes the entrance. Well, actually all the time, really.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say one last thing about Lance Storm being so critical about Chikara, he once held the Saskatchewan Hardcore International title in WCW. Look that up, folks.
Well, that was booked by Russo. I don't know what that has to do with Lance Storm, but point well taken, Dan. Point well taken. Omega, are you there? Please say you're there.
God, I hope so.
Woo-hoo!
Omega, are you ready? Because we had one hell of a weekend.
I am totally ready.
All right. From the beautiful Mandalay Bay Event Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, in front of 10,217 with a total gate of 1.5 million, it was UFC 170 on pay-per-view this past weekend, and another event, Omega, and another controversial ending.
Guess it just wouldn't be UFC without it.
Now, the reason I think that this was so controversial, let's give a little bit of backstory here. During an earlier event on the main card, Herb Dean was an official during the Mike Pyle, TJ Waldberger fight. Now, for the last 2 minutes of that fight, Waldberger was pounded into Berger. Mercilessly. It was horrible to watch.
It was brutal.
I was screaming at my screen saying, why isn't Herb Dean stopping this? Let's fast forward to the main event. Herb Dean is again your official. Now, this is after last month when people had a problem with Uriah Faber. Now, Uriah Faber, you can kind of understand a little bit more. He was not defending himself. We'll get into that probably during this discussion. Now, fast forward to the main event, of course, Ronda Rousey against Sarah McMahon. We get a shot to the liver. McMahon goes down. However, as she's getting back up, Herb Dean waves off the fight. Some people are making distinctions, saying, oh, no, she was down. She was clutching her stomach. And that's when Herb Dean rushed in to stop the fight. However, if you look at it, he waved it off when she was clearly standing back up. Now, of course, this was the women's bantamweight title fight. Ronda Rousey was your champion. She still is your champion. No longer winning by armbar. Now she has the fastest KO in women's history. Ronda Rousey defends the title against Sarah McMahon, she was a silver medalist in wrestling at the Athens Games.
But she lost liver kicks in wrestling.
As Sarah McMahon said during her post-fight interview, Omega, you can't train your liver. I know some people that do. They try. They try to train their liver, Omega, but through different methods. A pickled liver, if you will. Now, your thoughts on the fight. It only lasted 66 seconds, if you want to get technical. It only lasted 66 seconds, so a little over a minute. Your thoughts on the fight? What do you think? She took a few shots, Rousey, so she showed she didn't mind so much this time.
Well, I don't think she liked it, and not that anybody truly likes getting punched in the face. But I think she wanted to try to trade a little bit when she came out, just from her stance. And then McMahon punched her in the face, and she was like, whoa, I don't want to deal with this girl's power. at which point, Rousey decided to push her up against the cage.
And knee her in the liver.
Yeah, and knee her in the liver eventually. It was a good fight for Rousey. I think, you know, the one thing I said on Twitter is despite how the fight ended and Herb Dean stopped it, she landed a precision strike with that knee to the liver.
She
that
did.
That dropped Sarah McMahon. I mean, that was not a fluke. That was not luck. That was training and skill. So she did what she had to do. But when Sarah McMahon went down, I mean, I thought that was out. I thought she was done, but she did try to get it back up, so she probably could have continued potentially. But we'll never really know if she would have been able to recover fully. You know, it was an early stoppage in my opinion, but I don't know that it would have changed the outcome much. Once that knee landed, it was, I think it was just a matter of time before, because those things take a lot to recover. Even if McMahon had gotten back up, would she have been able to launch an effective offense to stave off a Rousey surge, or even could she avoid a judo throw at that point and avoid getting taken down and armbarred? There's a lot of ways that fight could have gone, and a lot of ways that Rousey could have won that match. I don't mind the early stoppage so much. Yes, I do think it was early, but I'm not calling it the end of the world robbery or whatever. I don't think Sarah McMahon is making excuses to that place either. I mean, she got hit in a spot that puts people down. Big strong guys get kneed and kicked in the liver and drop like stones. So
ask Brock.
Ask Brock. I mean, it is what it is. You know, Rousey looked good. She showed a couple of different facets this time, and shows that she you know, despite being the champion and being as dominant as she is, she's relatively inexperienced.
Very
mixed
true.
Martial arts. You know, she is still learning. She's still growing as a mixed martial artist, and she will continue to grow as a mixed martial artist as long as she doesn't get distracted by Hollywood. So it's hard to say when and if the rest of the women's division will catch up with her at this point.
That's very true. The only reason I have a problem with the stoppage is because Herb Dean earlier in the night allowed Wahlberger just to get massacred. He's just all over the place, it seems, lately. I mean, Herb Dean, everybody will tell you he's the best in the business, best in the business, best in the business. But the past couple of fights, his last three really have been questionable.
Yeah, I mean, take from that what you will. He's having a bad month. Okay, whatever. I mean, as many fights as he's done over his career, he's entitled to have a streak of bad luck or bad choices. Yeah, they're bad choices, but every ref in this business has made a choice, a judgment call that someone doesn't like. And it's in every sport that has a referee of some sort. So, you know, you just have to get used to it. It is what it is.
Very true. But I did sign the petition, Omega, to get Herb Dean out of the UFC. And the only referee is Big John McCarthy from now on. And I hope that you support me in my petition.
Well, Jim, Big John can't get a job in Nevada, so.
Well, we're going to have to work on that. We are certainly going to have to work with him getting licensed back in Nevada. Now, the co-main event wasn't much of a event at all.
Ugh.
They tried so hard to sell this.
Oh, they were hard selling. I cannot recall a fight that they tried to sell me on as hard as this one. Perhaps maybe Chael Sonnen versus John Jones or something like that. You know,
perhaps. Now, of course, the backstory is Patrick Cummings made. He's a virtual unknown. He was a barista in Starbucks or some coffee shop. There was history between him and Cormier, and he made Cormier cry in the wrestling room. Now, what stays in the wrestling room, what happens there stays there. A lot of talk went into this. They tried to sell it very hard that Cummings was – he can't get fights because he's so vicious. Mm-hmm. The man is undefeated. He's 4-0. He's a killer. What happens? He gets in there, and 1 minute, 19 seconds later, he leaves. He is TKO'd by punches, a very aggressive Daniel Cormier. What do you think of that one? I enjoyed Cormier's debut as a light heavyweight.
Yeah, I think he did what he had to do to save face in this case. He should have come into light heavyweight after all the success in heavyweight to take a guy like Cummins on short notice with all the walking out of the coffee shop and into the octagon. He should have destroyed this guy, and he did. In that respect, we didn't learn much about Daniel Cormier at 205 with this fight. What we did learn is that he can make the weight. He didn't seem drained by it. Granted, it was a short fight, but he looked good. He looked strong. He looked fast. He looked powerful. Exactly what I would expect him to be at 205. So you look to the future and you say, well, I think Cormier is a contender at 205.
Definitely, I have to agree with that. And somebody who looked a lot better this time than last time was Rory McDonald in his welterweight fight. He took on Damian Maia. Now, Maia did win the third round. No, he won the first round.
He won the first round. Yeah,
he won the first round. But after that, kind of gassed out and couldn't get a takedown and pretty bad fight. It went to decision. The only fight in the main card that went to decision, so luckily things turned around there for UFC. But Rory McDonald looked a lot better, 129-28 by all the judges. What did you think of this one?
I think Rory McDonald heard the call that he was a safe fighter and doesn't want to be a safe fighter anymore. I think being a safe fighter didn't get him many fans or many opportunities. I think he was surprised by Damian Maia and Damian Maia's ability to deal with his ground game, because I mean Maia has that top notch ground game we've always seen. What Maia doesn't have is cardio, and we saw that going into rounds 2 and 3. Where McDonald started actually looking a bit aggressive and looking more like the aggressive killer we thought he might turn out to be. When we were talking about Rory McDonald versus GSP someday. He's turned a corner perhaps with this fight. I like this McDonald. I like the aggression and I like the skills and the well-rounded skills. I just don't know what happened to Damian Maia. I don't think he was real. The problem I have is that Damian Maia didn't really challenge him in rounds 2 and 3. When Damian Maia did challenge him, he kind of folded. So, you know, I think there's still some question marks around McDonald, but I think he stays in that conversation at welterweight, and you know, he's certainly a top five fighter at welterweight right now. So I think he secured that position. Now, I think I'd like to see one more fight from him before I give him a title shot. But, you know, I'm glad to see it. Glad to see the change.
I have to agree with you. Now, another welterweight fight. Mike Pyle slaughtered T.J. Waldberger with elbows and punches. It was a TKO, third round, 4 minutes and 3 seconds. Probably should have went 2 minutes and 3 seconds, though. Your thoughts on this, not necessarily the Herb Dean, because we already talked about Herb Dean, but just, well, if that comes up in your discussion, go ahead and talk about it. But this fight, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought Pyle looked good. I think he was pretty much overwhelming Waldberger from pillar to post. This was Pyle's fight all the way. Waldberger didn't seem to have much of an answer for Pyle striking. And eventually it caught up with him in round 3, where he took that – Pyle eventually got on top and just kind of, you know, started pounding him out. It went on so long, I agree. Waldberger took a lot of punishment in this fight, probably took a lot of unnecessary punishment in this fight, and that's unfortunate. I think he probably could have been saved by Herb Dean, but, you know, this is another fight for Waldberger that he just hasn't really overwhelmed anybody. He hasn't looked very good in the last couple of fights, and he hasn't really beat anybody of note in his campaign, so... you got to wonder what the future holds for him, if he's even going to be in the UFC after that kind of performance. Pyle is going to continue to be one of those guys that you can put on a card, and he will usually put on a decent fight. So I think he certainly gets consideration on the next fight. You know, he's never going to be a title fighter. I don't think anybody believes that. He's sitting at 13 in the welterweight rankings right now. There's a lot of much better guys ahead of him. And, you know, he's... You know, like I said, he's good for that one or two, you know, exciting fights, or at least decent, entertaining fights, and that's fine. I think with the amount of events UFC is putting on, they need guys like Pyle.
And another welterweight fight. This one started off the pay-per-view card. Stephen Thompson defeating Robert Whittaker, TKO in the first round, 3 minutes 43 seconds. Not much really to say about this one.
No, not at all. I mean, I think Thompson looked really good. Again, just overwhelming striking, and you know, there's not much to say about it other than that. I mean, it was very one sided, but it was an exciting way to start off the card, and it was good to see, certainly on a main card, an actual finish. So, I mean, it started off good.
And there's a few preliminary fights I want to talk about. The first is, of course, Alexis Davis defeating Jessica Ai. Split decision, although it really probably should have been. It was 29-28 for Ai and 29-28 twice for Alexis Davis. Your thoughts on the fight? I didn't get to see it. I know you did.
I watched it. I actually scored it for Davis, and I was a bit surprised by the controversy, but it was close enough that I'm not going to stress about it. I thought Davis did enough in the first round to eke out the first round. She certainly dominated the second round, so I think there's no question that Davis won that second round. That was pretty much all Davis on top for that entire round. And then the last one I can see giving it to Ai. Again, this was one of these close fights where both women were using their Muay Thai very well. Landing strikes, but it wasn't. Neither one could finish, and then the judges go to split decision. It was a close fight for at least rounds one and three. So I mean, I just don't think either woman did enough to really strongly make a case for winning that fight either way. But Alexis Davis comes out and wins. I think she's one of the next people in the conversation for Ronda Rousey if Kat Zingano's not available or someone else.
They're saying June for Zingano. She could be back in the cage. And Alexis Davis, though, there's two women, 3-0 right now in UFC. One is the champion. The other is Alexis Davis.
Yep. I mean, yeah, you gotta think she's in that conversation. The bigger conversation really is
Cyborg.
Is Cyborg. Holly
Holm. Can she get to 135? I hear serious discussion of Holly Holm now.
Yeah.
I still think she's far away, but she still
hasn't. Yeah, I agree. Holly Holm's going to fight somebody before I'm ready to say she's ready for Rousey.
People are going back to her boxing, though.
I agree. I mean, she's got the boxing. I mean, she's got the striking pedigree. Absolutely. But how many strikers have we seen come through mixed martial arts and get hammered because they can't wrestle a guy?
James Toney.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, that's not even a good example. But, but you know, there are guys that come from boxing. They don't do – they you know, the one-dimensional fighters, for the most part,
Kimbo
Slice do not do well. Then again, the champion of the women's bantamweight division is pretty much a one-trick pony for now.
I don't know. So, she's showing more. She's showing more lately, so that's interesting. Rafael Azanko was very good in his fight.
Sun Tao was he dominated that fight, pillar post. Munoz had no business in that fight at all. I think he looks good. Sun Tao is now on a 6-fight winning streak. He beat TJ Dillashaw, who was in that conversation for a title shot at bantamweight. So you got to think that he's continuing to make his case for a title shot against Henan Barao. He's ranked number 3, stays there. Barao has beaten the top 2 contenders. I think Sun Tao has made his case now. For the UFC to say, okay, between it's either me or Dillashaw at this point, so pick one, and then maybe a Sun Tao gets let's assume TJ Dillashaw is the guy, then a Sun Tao has not fought either Mike McDonald or Uriah Faber. I'd like this. Well, he has fought Uriah Faber. I take that back. He lost to Uriah Faber back in 2010. But you could just certainly do that match again. You could give him Mike McDonald, and see really where he's at if he's not the next one for Henan Barao.
And Eric Coach came through with a pretty decisive victory.
Yeah, I heard about this one. I did not see it, but I mean, I think Eric Coates.
They showed it on the pay-per-view after, because the pay-per-view ended. So suddenly.
I'm old. I went to bed. So, but yeah, I didn't see that one. But that's a good win for Eric Coates. He was on a two fight losing streak, which is why he was on the fight pass card. Good win for him. Gets him back on track. This is a guy who has beat Rafael Assunção. He's beaten guys before with some decent names, so hopefully he can get back on track.
And fight of the night went to Rory McDonald, Damian Maia, which I thought was kind of odd, quite frankly. Performance of the night, well, I guess who else would you give it to? Performance of the night bonuses went to Ronda Rousey and Stephen Thompson. And Rousey walks home with a cool $160,000 for her treble. And Cormier also walked away with that. So interesting.
Make no mistake, Rousey walked away with a lot more than that.
Oh, well, with endorsements and whatnot, I'm sure. Oh,
endorsements and pay-per-view points. I mean, she is.
Does she get that?
You've got to believe she does. I mean, she is the mainstream attention she gets. I haven't seen the pay-per-view numbers yet, but she did pretty good last time out against Tate. So, I mean, she brings in eyeballs. They may not necessarily be paying customers to the pay-per-view, but she brings in mainstream eyeballs, and that's valuable to UFC. And even though I think Dana White and Lorenz Fertitta are concerned that she's going to retire early and go the Gina Carano route and go for movies, but then again, I haven't seen her in a movie yet, so maybe after that I'll change my mind.
All right. Now, coming up this Monday, there is a Fight Pass exclusive card. This is the first one that you got to pay for, people. You've had 2 months. You messed around with it, saw what Fight Pass has to offer you. Now you got to pay. And boy, are you going to be treated to a big one. It's Jong Hong Kim taking on John Hathaway. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for a guy who's generated eight fights in UFC, Hathaway has completely flown under the radar. You know, that being said, he hasn't fought anybody of note, other than Diego Sanchez way back in UFC 114. Going up against Stun Gun, Jong Hong Kim, who is really a really big welterweight, a guy who can muscle guys around, doesn't tend to finish very often, does sometimes, but he's kind of goes to decision quite a bit. I like Kim in this one. I think his size will be too much for Hathaway to deal with, and Hathaway really hasn't shown me that he can beat a guy of that top level caliber at welterweight. So I'm going to pick Kim in that fight.
I don't even know where this is being held, quite frankly.
Macau.
Where the hell is that?
China.
Oh. Well,
it's China. This is the finale of the Ultimate Fighter China.
Oh, well, that explains why I don't know who the hell these people are. There's a bunch of other people on this. Matt Mitrione's on the card too. He's taking on Sean Jordan. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, this is kind of an underwhelming heavyweight fight, if you want to call it. Neither of these guys has impressed in the UFC.
Wait a second. Mitrione defeated Kimbo Slice. How dare you?
Oh, how dare I? I'm sorry, where is he ranked right now?
I have no idea.
Neither one of these guys are ranked. Let's put it that way.
Well, there you go.
These guys... you know, we've seen Meathead before. He's got decent power. He's a big guy, can muscle guys around. Sean Jordan has some pretty decent striking. He's a guy that can knock out, but he can also get knocked out. He has not beat anyone recently. The people he's beat in the UFC, Mike Russo and Pat Barry, both are gone. Again, underwhelming heavyweights. Gabriel Gonzaga, he lost to in that spectacular punch KO way back when. Mitrione it has kind of peaked in the UFC since he won his first five coming out of the Ultimate Fighter, again beating Kimbo Slice. Losses to Chet Congo, Roy Nelson, Brendan Schaub, his only win over Phil DeFries in 19 seconds doesn't tell me a whole lot. Just doesn't have a ground game here. But that being said, I think Mitch Jerome's going to be the bigger fighter here because Sean Jordan's kind of a compact guy. Mitch Jerome's going to have the length. If he can stay upright and avoid Sean Jordan's power, I think Mitch Jerome can pull out a TKO victory here. But it's not going to be impressive.
And then we have Nam Phan taking on Vaughn Lee. And that's about the most I know about most of these fighters.
I mean, I think it's surprising to me that Nam Phan is still in the UFC. I mean, that's quite frankly, that's the biggest surprise there. I think the Ivan Menjivar Hatsuhiyoki fight is somewhat interesting at that level. This is going to be Menjivar's first fight at 125. So we'll see how he comes out there. Hiyoki's a guy who came in with a lot of hype, walking in to the UFC, but has not done well. 2-3 in the UFC. He was talked about for Jose Aldo at one time, and it's just not happening. So 145 is a good move for Menjivar, who did not have a great 145 run, lost to Wilson Reyes and lost to Uriah Faber, which was really started out Uriah Faber's kind of year of Faber last year, a very impressive win. I like Menjivar in this fight. I think he's going to have the more aggressive game, and again, Hiyoki is not impressed at all in UFC, so I'm going to pick Menjivar in that fight. Other than that, I'm with you. Not a lot to talk about here.
Yeah,
I haven't seen a minute of the Ultimate Fighter China, so I couldn't tell you anything about any of those guys.
Me neither. The fight pass, we're going to get into this a little bit later on as we talk about the WWE Network that launched earlier this week. Had a lot of trouble. It was very similar to when I tried to sign up on the exchanges for healthcare.gov. Oh, it was terrible. It took me 2 hours to sign up.
We can all watch together.
Terrible. Well, I'm on now, Dan. I don't need to come over. But the Xbox issue is still something that's bothering me.
Are we going to talk about this now?
Well, very briefly, Dan.
Oh, yeah. That's right now. That's the only thing that's bothering me to the point I finally tweeted them or sent a message to them today. That and the Roku app's not working for me. I signed up knowing there was going to be problems, so I don't know. I wasn't as bothered by it. I certainly understand where you're coming from 100%.
Just wait a second here. It's unacceptable to me. When
a billion-dollar
company, and everybody lets them off. No, you don't let them off the hook. It was unacceptable. It was only 135,000 people signed up. This wasn't the same numbers that flocked to healthcare.gov. 135,000. Okay? Yeah. 135,000, that was it. And that's a generous estimate, just to let you know. But we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this a little bit later on, Dan.
Okay.
And my only other comment would be, Dan, are we going to talk about this now? We're talking about it now. Don't do a deezy to me, mister.
Well, I wanted to know if I was good. I wanted to know if I should give you the short answer or the long answer. I had two programmed in my head.
Well, there you go, Dan. But what
ever
I'm doing now,
me to him again, I'll break your fingers.
I'm changing gears, and we are going to welcome our next guest. It's been quite some time. I believe he was on in June of 2012. Since then, he has gone on. He's a Monster Factory guy at this point, and he has done quite well there. He is also very happy because it's tax season. But we're going to talk about all this. It's our guest coming up, Major McClendon, after this. Get up! joining us right now. It is a legit major. It is Major McClendon, formerly of the United States Marine Corps. Thank you for your service, first of all, sir. But what I want to get into right now, the last time you were on this program, you weren't part of the Monster Factory.
No, actually, at the time, I think I was just getting started with the Monster Factory at the time. Last time, yeah.
Yeah, it was right after the tryouts. That's actually where I first met you, at those tryouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a very long time ago.
Yes, we're going back to May of 2012 for those tryouts. Now, I'll tell you what, a lot's happened since that time. You're a major part of the Monster Factory at this point. Just tell me how you got started with the Monster Factory, Danny Cage and Larry Sharp, and just let me hear about it.
Well, everyone knows, like, I started with DWF and Doc Diamond's school in Pensacola, New Jersey. And one day when I was over there, I got approached by a retired wrestler, Aaron Ganey, and he came up to me and he was like, "Hey, Cage, you're pretty good. Why don't you come down and let me introduce you to Larry Sharp? He's supposed to be having a tryout coming up." So I said, "All right, fine. I'll just go up and see what's going on." So I didn't know the tryout was going to be that big. It was about like 200 or 300 people there, you know. So, you know, they split us up into two groups, and it was, you know, a group for the professionals and a group for the guys who've never wrestled before. And, you know, I mean, they let the guys who never wrestled before go first. And, you know, so they don't see us go first and then try something that they've never, you know, actually attempted before. So, you know, the rookies went first, and then it was our turn. And then, you know, Larry asked, you know, in his little Larry Sharp voice, "Who wants to go first?" And, you know, I'm a confident guy. Just from all my years in the Marine Corps, I've just never been scared to do anything. So I was, "I'll go first," you know what I'm saying? So I got in the ring. And, you know, Larry told me to do what I do best, and that's what I did. I wrestled, I cut a good promo, and after everything was done, you know, he gave me very, very good compliments, and next thing you know, I was main event in the first Monster Factory show.
Yeah, so that takes you, that's really something that you did, and who did you wrestle? Was that Luis?
Yeah, I wrestled Luis that night, and what made that, like, kind of special to me, I wasn't even in the business, like, a year yet. And but I was excelling pretty fast, like, compared to, you know, other guys that have been in the business. I was, you know, literally wrestling 2-3 times a week, you know, for various promotions. And, you know, I was just getting my skills up and my confidence level up. So I wasn't scared to wrestle anybody. And I guess that they seen that automatically in me. And, you know, they just gave me the opportunity. And I took it and ran with it.
One thing I've always liked about the Major McClendon, it's not really a gimmick, though. I don't want to call it a gimmick. What I like about you as a person is the fact that you were a Marine and you do all these, you just tie it into who you are in the ring. It's just really turning mm-hmm. yourself up to 11, so to say.
Yeah, definitely. It's basically the motivated part of me, like the part of me that I was, you know, in the Marine Corps, the shouting, the spitting veins guy. The running 5 miles, you know, get big, do push-ups. I'm that guy in the ring, you know. But I just had to put that part into it because people were so used to seeing now I'm not saying, like, you know, Sergeant Slaughter and Craig Pittman and all those guys weren't aggressive, but they were just used to seeing, like, you know, the drill instructor type of Marines. They weren't used to seeing, like, the combat Marines, you know, the super motivator. So I was like, I wanted to, like, do something different with this gimmick, and I wanted to, you know, like, you know, give a little bit more motivation behind what I'm saying. Like, I want people to really feel me when I'm, like, saying something. So when I say, like, "Oorah," and they say "Oorah" back, you can, like, really feel that, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. And now, time was going on. You were working both the Monster Factory and DWF. Mm-hmm. One of the DWF shows that I really thought you came into your own was you wrestled WWE Hall of Famer Nikolai Volkoff.
Yeah, that was something else. That was one of the matches where I can say, like, I've stepped over the boundary of being, like, how can I say this, like, nervous against stars. You know what I'm saying? Because I remember when they told me, like, it was going to happen, I'm like, ah, no way. Are you serious? Like, he doesn't want to wrestle me, really? And they told me it was really going down. And when the day came, you know, before, I'm not going to lie, a couple hours before, you know, I was a little nervous. Cause I'm like, you know, the guy's like, no offense, he's like, you know, he's in his 60s or whatever. I didn't want to hurt him or I didn't want to get, like, a bad rep or anything. And I'm still, you know, in my first year. I just didn't want anything bad to happen. But, you know, after sitting and talking with him, and he gave me the go ahead. He said, "Look, I've seen you wrestle before. You know, you're not a bad kid." He was like, "So I want you to basically take control of the match and do what you do best." And when he said that, you know, it gave me all the confidence in the world that a WWE legend, you know, would give me the compliment of saying, you know, "Hey, kid, do what you want to do," which is like really rare. You know, you when you get in there with like veterans, there's usually, "Hey, what do you want to do?" You know, they usually never ask, like, what do you, like, go ahead and take care of the show, rookie, you know. And this is a guy who's wrestled Hogan and the Iron Sheik, and I mean for championships in Madison Square Garden, places where I wish I could be, you know. And so that was a very, very humbling moment.
Definitely. Now, of course, you were victorious in that match. What did that mean to you, actually winning the match?
I don't think I won that match. I think he won with the Russian sickle, but I really don't remember. I
thought you
won. It was just the win or the lose, it doesn't matter. It was just the fact that he trusted me with his body, you know what I'm saying? Especially at that age, you know, you just can't be trusting any indie guy, you know, especially, you know, with how some of the indie federations are ran nowadays. You just can't trust any regular old indie guy with your body. You know, you can get hurt, and especially Nikolai's worth, he's still worth a pretty penny in the indie scene. So, I'm not trying to hurt him or anything, but it's still just the simple fact that he gave me the thumbs up to say, "Hey, Major, you know, I appreciate your work, and your work is so good that I'm going to allow you to tell the story," you know, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Now, somewhere along that line, were you injured? I think there was an injury that came up around this.
Yeah, last year, there's a funny story behind it, too. So I just had got, like, my new job as an accountant at Moonsight Management. And I was, you know, I was just on a wave of momentum. You know, I just graduated college. You know, I got my new job. You know, everything was starting to go good. The only thing that was of course, wrestling was clicking because I was on a winning streak, but I wasn't on fire like in my career like I was at the time. So the night before, I'm at practice, and it's me, QT Marshall from ROH, Tommy Macklin, who is Steve Kuprick in NXT right now, and I think Steve Chass was there, too, with Danny Cage. And, you know, we were wrestling around and doing heat drills. And I went up for a jumping stomp on Macklin. And I don't – it's a funny story behind Macklin, too. But I went up on a jumping stomp on Macklin. And next thing you know, I hyperextended my knee, and I was out. And, I mean, Danny was telling me, he was like, "Look, man, we have some big plans for you the next day." And I was like, "Well, how big?" And he was like, "We're talking about, like, really big plans." And, you know, it almost made me cry because, you know, you spend your whole career trying to go for that one moment, and I still haven't had that one moment yet. And, you know, it was supposed to be, like, the next day, and I wound up, like, you know, tearing my knee up.
Now, during this time as well, you said you got the new job. You did graduate, so congratulations.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
But at this point, you started your own business.
Yes.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
When I was in college, once I learned how easy it was to really run a business. Now, I'm not saying running a business is like, you know, a cakewalk, but once I learned the formula on how to run a business, I was like, well, I can see why some of these guys are rich, you know. I was like, and it would kind of be like an insult for me to work for some of these corporate guys, and I'm just as smart as them, you know. So I was like, well, why don't I just start my own business so I don't have to answer to a boss or anything like that. Now, I did take the first job because, you know, I needed some experience. I wanted to, like, see how it would feel like to be an accountant at a pretty good company. And I only had to answer to two people who were the vice president and the president. It was a really good gig, you know. And for me to be, you know, that young in that position was really impressive. And I was one of the, as a matter of fact, not one of, I was the only African-American in the entire company of 1,000 people. So that was really speaking volumes at the time. So, you know, I took that little experience and I ran with it. And, you know, with all the suggestions that I was making and, you know, my bosses were giving me incredible compliments. And these are coming from, you know, successful businessmen. So, you know, that really meant a lot. So that kind of boosted my confidence up to say, you want to know something? Maybe I really can do this by myself. And I was like, if I do fail, you know, it is what it is. I'm still young. I'm only 26. So if I fail, I still have a long, long time to get myself together. And who's, I mean, it's not really hard for me to, like, you know, go out and get a job. You know, I have a degree from LaSalle, a pretty good school. And on top of that, I'm a veteran. So, you know, it's not really going to be too hard for me to get a job, you know. So, I mean, why not? You know, if it fails, it fails. If it does good, then, you know, I'm planning on doing this again next year. But even, you know, even if I do fail, I'm still planning on doing this next year. It's just a part of learning from your mistakes and just trying to capitalize on opportunities.
That's right, because failure is a learning experience. I don't think you're going to fail, though.
You know, even the most successful people fail sometimes. Failure doesn't necessarily have to be like, oh, I went bankrupt, or it could just be like, oh, I didn't meet my goal this year, you know? What did I do wrong that, you know, Liberty did right that I couldn't get the customers from Liberty? Well, what do I have to do next year? Maybe I have to advertise with this people. Maybe I have to hire a number of people. Maybe I have to move somewhere, you know? You have to learn from what's not pushing you forward, you know? Business is one big equation, man. Everyone knows the simple formula, 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 1 can't equal 4. You know, you got to figure out what's going to make that 1 or 2. So you got to just keep on pushing until your product becomes like a household name and people are going to want to use you and tell their friends, like, look, I want you to meet this guy, James McClendon. He knows exactly what he's talking about. He's not just one of these scrub tax accountants. No offense to the people who work as, you know, tax preparers or whatever. There's no offense against them. But I'm talking about the quality of service. You don't have the same quality of service that you would have from a college graduate. And then you have someone who served the country as well doing your taxes. So, I'm not a disrespectful human being. You're not going to hear, like, crazy stuff coming out of my mouth. I'm trying to get you the best return possible. And on top of that, I just don't do tax returns. You know, I'm trying to do a business with other companies as well, just trying to be, like, you know, a regular accountant. Just to try to get my this isn't just, you know, a tax service. This is an accounting firm. So, I mean, anything that does with accounting, you're talking about auditing, bookkeeping, anything. So I'm trying to basically market myself on not just a smaller level where I have to deal with, you know, everyday people, but on a business level as well. So, you know, big corporations can call me up and be like, look, we got a job for you for 3 months. We'll pay you this. You know, it'll be kind of like a contract, you know. And I believe that's better, because when you're working for yourself, number one, you get more, you know, and plus you feel better too, because it's like nursing your own baby and then watching it grow up in front of your eyes.
Is there ever a time you think a what if question? Say this business you're running gets bigger than you hope.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think maybe that you'll turn away from wrestling completely, or is it something that you'll always keep in your life?
It depends, man. It depends how big it gets. Like, if it gets to the point where it's, you know, I'm like a millionaire or something, then I probably will brush wrestling aside. And it's not saying, like, I still don't love wrestling. You know, I still support the Monster Factory. I'll still, you know, probably make an appearance or two. But it's just the fact that why should I crash my body up and, you know, take all these risks and stuff like that when, you know, I have my life set, you know? There's no use in me. I've already had, you know, 2 concussions, knee injuries, dislocations, everything. So, why do it, you know, if I'm already where I need to be, you know? And like I said, it's nothing against wrestling. because I do love it. You know, it's been something I've been loving since as far as back as I can remember. But it's like asking that football player, like, if you hit the lottery for $150 million, would you still be playing football tomorrow? They'd probably say no.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense. That's a good answer, my friend. Good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the Monster Factory. You've since returned since your injury. What's going on there? Tell us what you're doing in the Monster Factory now.
The Monster Factory is shaping up to be a very, very big federation in the United States. It's starting to get its name back because I'm not saying like they lost it, but it dimmed down over the years because people weren't looking at it as they did back in the 80s, and now it's getting to the point where people are looking at it like they did back in the 80s. But ever since my injury, I've been doing tag work with the former champion, Ant Bennett. He's a good kid, you know what I'm saying? He listens. He has an amateur wrestling background, so he knows how to move. He knows how to work. The kid's very humble, so, I mean, I'm glad that they put me with him, you know. And it's a good experience for me and for him because now he gets to learn a little bit more from a guy who's been in longer than him. And at the same time, I'm learning from him as well because, you know, just because he's a rookie and, you know, he's green doesn't mean he doesn't have something to bring to the table that I can be like, oh, I didn't know that before, you know, because he's an amateur wrestler. He can definitely teach me a thing or two in the ring. Now, I might be a step ahead of him as far as, like, psychology might go, but, you know, he's the bread and butter. He's the wrestler of the two of us. I'm just the I'm the big tough showman guy. But I mean, I got to give a lot of credit to Ant. So they've been doing that, and then just last week I wasn't at the last two shows. I had a show on the same day as the Monster Factory that I was booked for a few months. So I took the UWF booking in Fairless Hills, and while I was gone, they introduced a new guy. His name's War. And he attacked my partner, and he attacked Shaheen, too, and it was kind of like a personal shot towards me because he wears the patriotic colors, too, but he's not going for the babyface type of patriotism. He's more of the, you know, the heel type patriotism, and he's under a mask. So we're going to see what's going to boil down there. And with that feud, I'm really excited about it because this is like the first time where it's like a big storyline is like surrounded by me, and I'm like the main guy in it. You know, we were always used to being like the secondary guys in the story, like in the Joe Gibson Mark Cruz story. Me and Aunt Bennett were the secondary guys. We were the guys that were helping out Joe, so Joe can win the championship. Now this story is based around Major McClendon versus War. So now since this is my baby, and hopefully, you know, Danny will let me throw some, you know, creative control in there because I have a whole bunch of stuff that we can add to this story to make it, you know, bigger than what it is because we're talking about a guy who's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and I've had literally a best friend of mine kill himself over something like that. So mm-hmm. I've had personal experience with PTSD. So, I mean, this could shape up to be something very, very good, and it could be a lesson to the audience as well to, you know, you got to be careful and watch over service members when they come back from war because, you know, even a car, like let's say, for example, someone's in a car crash, you can't tell me they're not going to think twice about getting into a car, and it's the same exact way when you're coming back from war, coming to civilian life, you know what I'm saying? You're paranoid. Most of the time, you know, you don't think the same way as you thought before you went there, you know. It's just a whole different story. So, I mean, I want to bring kind of that side out from a soldier's point of view so that people can kind of see, you know, the kind of the emotional side to it.
Now, just wondering, less than 2 years, you're associated with the Monster Factory. How does it mm-hmm. feel being under that brand, under that name, and especially during a quote-unquote rebuild where the name is coming back into the main?
It's an honor, actually, because, you know, you got guys like Larry Sharp and all the guys he brings in, and they're giving you, like, all these compliments, and you have basically a dictionary of knowledge there. And plus, you know, everyone knows the Monster Factory is one of the, it is the first wrestling school in America, 1983, But on top of that, the Monster Factory is basically the Harvard of professional wrestling schools. You know, you can, like, for example, if let's say all three of us went to college, I'd be like, you know, I graduated from LaSalle, and let's say we're all accountants, you know, and I'd be like, oh, I graduated from LaSalle, and Dean says, oh, I graduated from UPenn, and your partner says, I graduated from Harvard. We're going to look at your partner like, wow, man, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, that's the look that we get when we you know, interact with other indie guys. They always ask me, well, how's the Monster Factory going? That's the first thing they ask me, not how's my daughter doing? How's the Monster Factory, man? Like, wow, man, you guys must really want to be in there, huh? But it gives the name, you know, the name alone is, it gives it away, man. It's a place that builds monsters. And plus, they're on a roll right now. They just got Tommy Macklin in, Steve Kubrick, and I know for sure he's going to do good things because he was a Marine too, and he's got a good head on his shoulder. He shuts up and listens. He's got that boot camp mentality, which I like. So he's gonna represent us very well, which should open doors for more guys at the Monster Factory. So I'm pretty glad that I'm a part of this, and I was able to, you know, be one of the pioneers along with Luis and Shaheem and Mark Cruz and Mike Spanos, and the majority of the beginner guys who started when we were getting, you know, 50 fans, and now we're pulling in 200-300 fans, and it's going to be possibly more because now we have to move the ring to the middle to get more chairs, and, you know, we're getting a better camera crew and stuff like that. So this stuff's getting real, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
So not only that, I want to go back a little bit because I looked through your pictures before you came on the show, and I saw you were dancing with the Blue Meanie. Tell me about that. What happened there?
What happened? I got to remember what happened on the storyline. I think Aunt Bennett was I know what happened. Aunt Bennett was in a feud with Wild Bill Wiles, who is Bilvis Wesley, to the ECW guys who's on from there. And it was a sideburns versus hair match. So the loser basically is Ant lost. He had to shave off of his afro, and if Bilvis lost, he had to shave off his sideburns. So I think like Bilvis like cheated to win or something like that. So he was about to shave Ant's head. So I came down to help him, and you know, we wound up holding him down and shaving his sideburns off. And afterwards, you know, we were about to leave, and I didn't. And usually, the dance is coming at the end. I didn't know Meanie wanted to dance with us. I was on our way to the back, you know, I'm still trying to look like the big tough Marine. And Meanie, you know, stops me and says, like, look, we're going to do this dance. And I'm just looking at him like, are you serious, man? And he's like, yeah, we're going to do this dance. So, I mean, we just, you know, me, Aunt Bennett, and Blue Meanie just stood in the middle of the ring, and we just raised the roof up for all the Monster Factory Pro Wrestling fans.
Yeah, I saw that picture, and I said, I have to ask him about that, number one. Now, this goes with the trainers, because, of course, Blue Meanie's one of the trainers there.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Cage, of course, is another. But mm-hmm. you brought up Bilvis Wesley. What's it like getting trained by these guys? Because these are guys with a lot of experience, and they've done
mm-hmm.
a lot of great things, especially Meanie and Bilvis. So
into
that, what it's like getting that experience.
Well, it's great working with those guys, man, because they've worked with, you know, the top stars in the business. So they give you so much, like, advice on, like, psychology. And plus, you know, they're in the ring with us, too, especially Wild Bill. Wild Bill's like he's a shooter, man. He used to be an amateur wrestler back in the day with Balls Mahoney. And so, I mean, he teaches us, like, a lot of amateur-style stuff and how to work in the ring and, you know, old-school psychology, all the stuff that the other schools don't teach you, you know. They're busy teaching you how to do shooting star presses and not how to tell a story in the ring. And that's what, you know, Bilvis and Meanie bring to the Monster Factory. Danny brings more of the, I would say, now Danny has back problems, so he can't get in the ring with us, per se, like we would like him to. And I know he would, bring a lot of good knowledge if he could get in the ring with us, but due to his back problems, he can't. But Danny's more like, if this was football, he would be like Coach Belichick. You know what I'm saying? He would be like Bill Belichick. He's the he, you know, even though he's not in there, he's shouting the knowledge at you to do this, to move like that. You know what I'm saying? And we're all, most of the 95% of the guys at the Monster Factory are two-sport athletes, athletic guys, you know what I'm saying? So we could, you could say something to us and even just, you know, hand demonstrate it a little bit, and we'll get it basically the first or second try. We're pretty fast learners there. So, you know, so it's never like a whole issue of, you know, Bill having to go home or Minnie having to go home, like, man, these guys don't get it. You know, it's always, oh, man, I can't wait to show these guys this next week. And, you know, and I know that they're proud of us because, you know, I remember one week we were going over drop kicks, right? Mm-hmm. And because no one really uses the drop kick that much. And I don't know why, but, you know, no one really uses this stuff for, like, Spanos. So we were practicing drop kicks one week. And I remember the next show, it was probably, what, like 8 or 9 matches. And I think, like, out of, like, probably 7 out of the 9 had people doing, like, multiple drop kicks in them. So, I mean, you know, those guys are, like, they're training us right. And, plus, they're adding stuff to our repertoire that we didn't have before, you know. Because before, you know, even though I could drop kick, I didn't really kick like that. I didn't usually slow down my pace like I do now in the ring to, you know, expand the time and tell a better story. I was, you know, go in there, beat the crap out of you, and go. But, I mean, ever since, you know, learning the more psychology part of wrestling due to the Monster Factory, I've been able to get a better understanding on how wrestling works. It's basically, you got to look at it like it's a Broadway with no take twos. It's basically an action movie that you can't, there's no cut, there's none of that. So, I mean, if you see it like that, you should be fine, you know. Like, even in, like, your favorite action movies, like, Bloodsport is one of my favorite action movies of all time. Like, if it wasn't for Frank Dukes being the underdog, that story wouldn't have made any damn sense, you know. It wouldn't have made sense, as, you know, the whole story behind it. You know, the girl was in his corner. She almost was the reason why he lost, and he overcame it because, you know, his friend. It's a whole story behind it instead of just two guys going in there beating the crap out of each other. And that's what, you know, you learn stuff like that at the Monster Factory.
That's a really interesting way to concisely put it. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about was your relationship with Hall of Famer, Independent Wrestling Hall of Famer, Aaron Gainey. What's going on there? You guys are pretty close.
Yeah, man. Aaron's been one of my friends for a while, like ever since I've been in the business, man. He was basically, now I will give credit to Larry and Dan and them because they were the ones who said, all right, we're going to put him in the match. But I wouldn't have got recognized by, you know, the promoters and stuff if it wasn't for Aaron. Aaron was the first person to say, look, I'm going to take you out of here and I'm going to put you in front of somebody who could get you somewhere. So, like, could honestly get you somewhere. And, you know, the wrestling business, and I hate to say this, but it's a very stingy business, you know. I do believe in hooking your brother up, quote-unquote. A lot of guys don't because, you know, a lot of guys are kind of insecure about their spots. You know, they don't want to give up their spots. And, I mean, sometimes you can't blame them because that's like saying, let's say if, like, John Morrison doesn't really, he's not signed to ROH, TNA, or WWE right now. Let's say if I was friends with John Morrison and he said, hey, Major, could you get me into the Monster Factory? Major, now, I would say yes, but I'm saying anybody else would probably be like, I don't know, man, especially if they're, like, you know, top stuff there. They don't want another top guy there taking their shine, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it happens, you know? It is what it is.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I do want to get you to talk a little bit more about your business. Give some plugs, some numbers. You got a special going on. Let us know.
Yeah, definitely. My business, like I said, it's an accounting firm. We just don't do taxes. We do just anything that does with accounting at all. If you have a business and you need an accountant, you know it is time to get your business taxes and stuff done as well. Or if you need a bookkeeper to, like, get your stuff up to date, so you can present it to another accountant, whatever you want to do. You know, all my services are very, very cheap. They're not, you know, $250 H&R Block, and they don't. And it's not the service neither. You have a college graduate who knows what he's doing, who knows the ins and outs of taxes, and you're getting quality service at a very, very cheap price. And what sets me aside from, you know, the other accounting firms is that I take it old school. You know, I remember when I was younger, I remember seeing, like, now this was just, this has nothing to do with accountants in general, but I always thought when you got your taxes done as a kid that, like, the guy would come to your house and he would do your taxes and then he would leave. I didn't, you know that people went to, like, you know, to go get their taxes done at a place. Now, this is what I thought, you know, when I was 5 or 6 years old. But I took that idea and I was like, well, why don't accountants come to people's houses? Why don't they? Because, you know, people are, I'm not saying they're getting lazy, but people want stuff at their own convenience and they want it now and they want it fast. So I was thinking, well, H&R Block doesn't send accountants to your house. I was like, well, why don't I do that? You know, instead of people got to get all their information together just to go to H&R Block, and if they forgot something, they have to go all the way home. And most of the time, the H&R Block guys don't know what the hell they're talking about. You know, they might get you audited by the IRS, and you'd be like, oh, man, I wound up owing all this money. And on top of that, I'll give you tax advice on how to get a better return next year, or if you want to save some money, how to save money, how to invest in a business, how to grow your business. I specialize in all that. I'm located in a very, very nice neighborhood in Springhouse, PA. The address is 921 Bethlehem Pike, Springhouse, PA, 19002. The phone number is 267-793-8385, or you can reach me at 215-725. I think it's 3783. That's what it is. So, I mean,
yes,
any accounting needs that you need, just contact me, man. You know, I'm a very nice guy. As everybody knows, I'm very laid back. I'm not going to scream at you like, well, why are you doing this? What's your business? It's your business. I'm just here to help you to try to excel for the year coming up in the next few years. And plus, I want people to be able to trust me to say, look, I'm going to suggest you to my grandmother. Because, you know, she's about to retire. Maybe she needs some advice on that. You know, just because you got your taxes done doesn't mean that you can't refer me to somebody. Or maybe you know somebody else that that owns a business that might need my expertise. So, you know, I'm trying to be well-versed in just not just the tax area, be so that way I can be an all-year thing and not just a January to April thing. I want it to be a year-round thing, and I want to be able to work for myself.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds great. Now, what do you got coming up on the Monster Factory? I know there's a show coming up on the 8th. What do you
March
got?
March 8th. I'm not sure what they got me doing. Now, the Monster Factory is kind of like WWE. You go in, most of the time you're going in there not knowing what the hell is going on. You'll probably know, like, the day before, but Danny has, like, this philosophy. He doesn't like the whole Macho Man thing. Now, what I mean by that for people who aren't business savvy, you know, wrestling business savvy, the Macho Man thing is practicing your match before you, you know, perform it on Saturday, because, you know, you'll start thinking like, oh, I missed this spot, and you'll start messing up and stuff. So, like, I'll probably say 70% of the time, I don't know who I'm wrestling on in. I don't know what he wants me to do. I don't know if he wants me to cut a promo. I don't know if he wants me to fight a guy. I don't know if he wants me to just go out there and say something to the fans. I don't know what he wants me to do, but I'm in my head, I'm expecting a brawl because, you know, the guy War just attacked two of my close friends, and, you know, Major McClendon ain't taking that. So, you know, it's probably going to be a beatdown coming up for this new guy.
All right, that sounds great. And one thing I want to leave you with. Well, first, plug yourself, Major McClendon, if somebody wants to follow you on Twitter or Facebook.
Oh, on Twitter, yeah. Hit me up on Twitter at Major McClendon, MOJORMCCLENDON. You can look me up on Facebook at James McClendon, and you can look up Honor Tax Service as well on Facebook under Honor Tax Service. You can also look up Honor Tax Service on Twitter as well, at Honor Tax.
All right. Now, one thing I did want to say is there was a little bit of, as they say in the business, heat, in quotation
mm-hmm.
marks, between myself and the Monster Factory. We said things back and forth. there were two people. It was you and Aaron that anytime I saw you guys were always you never took it personally. You never had a grudge with me. Made it a thing, and I just want to thank you for that because it certainly did mean a lot.
Man, a lot of you, these guys got to understand at the end of the day that this is not real, you know. So if you, and at the same time, we're all grown men. I've been friends with two guys who completely hate each other. That doesn't mean I'm going to go back and be like, oh, you know, Jeffrey said this or Adam said this. No, that's not my business, you know. What you guys have is what you guys have. I'm still friends with you because you never treated me wrong. I'm still friends with Dan because Dan has never treated me wrong. Anything between the middle of you guys is between you guys. You know what I'm saying? And I'm glad that you guys took the higher road and everything's fine now. But, you know, yeah, I don't, when situations like that happen, and this is just a message in general to guys in the business, you don't have to, like, quote-unquote, take a side. You can be neutral. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to fight both battles. You can definitely be neutral because half of the time you don't know what the fight is about. You know, you don't know what that person did. It could be just a misunderstanding, you know. And then at the end of the day, you're going to look like a jackass for defending the wrong person. Like, you know, what was that for? Keep a good relationship with as many people as possible. Don't burn bridges, you know. And now, unless the bridge is just completely, you know, effed up, don't burn bridges, man. There's no use to burn bridges. You don't know who knows who. You know, there's quite a few guys in this business I don't like personally. Now, am I going to tell them that, you know, that shit? Hell no, I'm not going to tell them that. You know, because they haven't done anything to me per se or personally to me for me to address them like that. And on top of that, if I'm going to address them like that, I'm a grown man. I can fight my own battles. I've been to war. I ain't scared of nobody in this damn business. I'll go up to you and say it to your damn face. I don't got to Facebook it. I don't got to podcast it. I don't got to say a shoot interview. I'll just go up and just say it to your face, man, because, I mean, I'm not scared. I wasn't scared of some guns in Iraq, so what makes you think I'm going to be scared of another human being, you know? So, I mean, and plus, we're all grown men. If you're taking it, if your estrogen level was that high and you're taking it, like, you know, so personal, then you need to get checked out, man. You know, this is not football. This isn't basketball. This is a play with grown men slamming each other. So if you have a problem outside of that and you want to, you know, get down, I suggest you don't do that with a United States Marine, man. So I'm just saying.
He's my new favorite person.
You have certainly upped the ante, and I love you for it. Major McClendon,
more than you know.
Major McClendon, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure. We got to make this a much more frequent event, but thank you so much
definitely,
for coming
man.
On tonight.
You know how to contact me. You got my contact info. Whenever you need me on, just give me a call, man.
You better believe it, but thank you and have a good night, sir.
You too, man. Thank you for having me on.
McClendon, one of my favorite people in this world. He always was a gentleman, still is. I haven't seen him in quite some time because places that we both worked, they aren't running. So it's hard to catch up with him. I got to check out a Monster Factory show. That could be the final piece of the puzzle, Dan.
I tell you what, he says things with such honesty and gusto. It's hard not to hate that dude.
I don't know what the hell you meant by that, Dan.
It's hard not to hate him.
I hate him so much. Jesus, Dan.
I was thinking of the other side. Anyway, it's hard not to like that guy, and it's good to hear after so long that he's doing so well so quickly. It's just great all around.
And this is with a hiatus, Dan. He had a good 6 months that he was laid out.
Man, 2 concussions already. You can't respect this guy from the Marines. You couldn't respect him any more than you are.
I agree, Dan. Now let's move on. Elimination Chamber was this Sunday. And besides Wyatt's against the Shield, not too much to talk about. Dan, your thoughts on the card?
You pretty much nailed my feelings about it. I mean, it's just underwhelmed going into the main event anyway. It did not end at all the way I thought. I didn't care either way. It's a harsh way to put it. I didn't mind the way it ended. But that tag team match, I'm really liking. I don't know what else they can do with it, but that was a great moment. You've seen it mentioned 100 times since the pay-per-view that this is awesome chant starts before the match. What else can you say?
A bit overstated.
And the rest of it, it was all right. It wasn't bad. It was okay. It was an okay show.
Before I move on to Omega, I do want to make the note that they did say, it should be noted, is what I'm trying to say, that all of Triple H's friends won that night. New Age Outlaws, Batista, and Randy Orton. Omega, your thoughts on the card?
I think I agree with both of you. I was underwhelmed with pretty much everything except for the Wyatts versus the Shield. I thought that was extremely well done. I guess I did like the Wyatts coming out and interrupting the chamber match. I mean, I thought it was hokey, but it was kind of cool. Just kind of broke up the match. I thought there was some decent spots in the Elimination Chamber itself. I didn't care for the way it ended. Once Kane came out, you saw it coming a mile away, and it was just like, okay, fine.
Daniel Bryan took that header into the door of the chamber. Whew. I felt it. You can't break glass and cut your head open with the blood policy, but I still felt that through the television. Damn.
Certainly. Titus O'Neil was impressive in his victory. I think they have big things in plan in store for him. Bautista did defeat Alberto Del Rio. Randy Orton, of course, was victorious in the Elimination Chamber. I thought waiting 26 minutes for the first elimination, it kind of bored me. I'll be quite honest. Maybe my attention span, I don't know. What do you guys think of that? Omega, you first, and then Dan.
I actually liked it. I think it makes the point that these are all, heavyweight contenders. The guys they had in there early were good for the most part. You got Cesaro in there. Sheamus, I could take or leave, but Sheamus, Christian, I enjoyed that. Their interaction all the way up to the end, until Cena got in, and then. But even then, it was fine. I thought it was decent. It wasn't the most memorable Elimination Chamber ever, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was nice to have all the people in there. I mean, of course, I have the same reason I like to watch the Rumble. So,
yeah, I boring is not the word for it. I was surprised that it went that long, and like Chris just said, I was I thought it was great that they were all in the ring together at one point. But, yeah, I don't want to just repeat what Chris says. I feel the same way. It was just, it was okay. It wasn't the best. But, yeah, I was happy that it was like, I was getting the War Games vibe from it.
Yeah, I can see that distinction made. Now, of course, the WWE Network did launch on Monday. There were troubles, as we talked about earlier. But, however, once you get past the troubles, once you get past the fact you can't watch on Xbox for the foreseeable future for some reason, what do you guys think? Did you both sign up? I'll start with you, Dan, then Omega.
Well, I signed up. Yes, I signed up. I didn't even put the trial in. I just signed up because either way you're putting money in. I waited a little longer. I almost did it first thing, and I just didn't want to. But I'm pleasantly surprised with the way it's running, and as far as the problems we mentioned earlier, and you just mentioned, the Xbox thing is really aggravating me at this point. And the Roku thing, let me explain this real quick. I signed up for the subscription, right? And you go to the Roku site, and you pick channel and WWE, and you download it. Well, it's not popping up on the box, the Roku box. So you go to the WWE.com/Roku site, and it takes you through the subscription process again.
Oh.
So, and I'm like, are you telling me I have to buy it a second subscription for the Roku? So I send them an email. I don't know. I think it might be a glitch, but if they're making you buy two subscriptions, that's terrible. But
I'm sure it's a glitch, Dan. I wouldn't think that you're buying two. That's what I was thinking.
But once they get the Xbox and the Roku thing going, this will be fantastic. The content's great. I'm happy with the programming. I was watching old school stuff today. Good stuff. I'm kind of bored already with the pre-game post-game kind of thing they're doing.
I love it.
But other than that, I think it's great. This is going to hopefully it makes the money they want. They keep it going for a long time, and we can enjoy it for a long time. I love it.
All right, Chris.
I had some trouble getting signed up on Monday. I didn't sign up till after work, and I think I was must have either they were just having problems all day, or they were having problems with people doing the same thing I was. And I don't even think that was the network. I think there was just their website wasn't working correctly. Couldn't get to where I wanted to go. Very confusing. When I finally got in, I haven't had a whole lot of time to mess with it, but it seemed to work fine. I got it working on my PlayStation. I got it working on my laptop. My computer. So I haven't had the problems getting in and logging in that some people are reporting, but I really haven't had enough of a chance to go through stuff. I watched a little bit of WrestleMania 1, and it came through pretty good. Overall, content-wise, I don't really have much of an opinion yet, but I am looking forward to the pay-per-views.
All right, now, I have to know, and I think you kind of answered already, Chris, but the first thing I watched on there was the Bunkhouse Stampede from 1988. After that, I went to No Mercy 2006. Omega, why would I watch No Mercy 2006?
Was that the one we went to?
Yes!
Yes, okay. Yes. Why not?
I was kind of saddened because, of course, on that show, Chris Benoit returns, wrestles William Regal in quite a match, probably the match of the night, although I will say this, Matt Hardy and Sugar Shane Helms had a great match as well. But what I take away from that is just how sad I was watching that moment because I was so happy. And I remember because there was kind of a glitch during that show where they flashed up Benoit's video before his music started playing. So that moment of when his video first comes up on the screen and the crowd reacts, because Benoit was gone for about 5 months at the time. So it flashes up there, Chris Benoit, crowd reacts, nobody knows what to do. William Regal reacted to it at first, then stopped reacting. Tony Chimmel didn't know what to do. And then finally the music hits and he comes out, and it was just a wonderful moment. And I'm just so sad because I shared that moment with you live with our families. And it was just one of those things where you look back and you just see the tragedy and you're like, I can't enjoy it like I once used to. And I'm not trying to get into a Benoit thing. I'm not doing that. But just kind of sad looking back at that moment. Your thoughts on that, Omega, then, Dan, I'll ask you the first. Actually, Omega, go ahead and answer. If there was a, you said WrestleMania 1, but your thoughts on that Benoit match.
Yeah, I thought it was good, actually. I remember the what you were saying about the glitch. I do remember that now that you mentioned it, but I actually don't have a whole lot of like memories of the actual like card there.
You don't remember the main event?
What was the main event? The
four-way. King Booker was the champion at the time.
Oh, yeah,
he was the
world
heavyweight champion, and he took on Bobby Lashley, Batista,
and Finlay. Oh, that's right, Lashley.
And
yeah, that would be why I don't remember. Okay.
Undertaker took on Mr. Anderson.
I remember that piece. I remember Taker taking on Anderson. I remember seeing that.
Disqualification victory.
Yeah,
that was
dumb. Yeah. But no, I remember it was more about we had a good time going to the show and that kind of stuff. About that. Yeah, but it's impressive. I guess it's at least saying something that they're actually showing Benoit matches.
Yeah, like I said, I was just sad. I was just filled with a certain degree of sadness. Dan, what was the first pay-per-view you watched? I went pay-per-views only here.
Pay-per-views, Halloween Havoc 89.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why did I even ask? I should have known.
Jeez.
Halloween Havoc 89. What happened at Halloween Havoc 89? Was that the coal miners?
I was there. No, that's 93.
You were there.
It's Ric Flair and Sting versus Great Muta and Terry Funk in the Thunderdome cage match.
Oh, Thunderdome.
And Bruno was the special referee.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, you were there. That's cool. You were there.
Shut up.
Now, of course, tomorrow they're going to have NXT Arrival, their first pay-per-view. I guess you could call it a pay-per-view, but the live event is what they're calling it. I'm looking forward to that. Not sure what's going on, but who cares? It's NXT. Dan, looking forward to it?
I'm more than looking forward to it. And is there any irony that they're airing it on a Thursday?
There's no irony there at all. There's very deliberate and purposeful.
Oh, I see. See, when you said that, I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't get it. Because TNA is such a non-factor to me. So I was like, what? What happens on the Thursday? Oh, that's funny. I had no idea. Literally, I had no idea. I'm not doing this. I just, wait, what happens on Thursday? Wow.
One last thing about that. I meant to mention this. It was the only time I had ever seen Gary Hart in person because he was actually working with WCW. He was working with WCW, and he was Great Muta's manager at the time.
Yes, indeed. Didn't he have something to do? Was Abdullah the Butcher? Halloween Havoc did Abdullah the Butcher get? Was that 91 or something when he got electrocuted? I got to go back and watch that.
That was... it was 91. It was in it was in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Where the stupid electric, the Chamber of Horrors match. Yeah, that's it.
Yes, Chamber of Horrors.
Do you want to? Okay, so real quick, Steiner Brothers, Sting, and El Gigante versus Abdul the Butcher, the Diamond Stud, Cactus Jack, and Vader. That was the Chamber of Horrors match.
That is a Chamber of Horrors, Dan, but for a completely different reason. But I can't wait. I can't wait to see this wonderful. I got to go back and watch that. I got to watch him get electrocuted.
Hey, man, it's the first match on the card. So.
I know. That's one of the great things about it. I did watch this very dangerous match. It was another Thunderdome match. I don't know how the cage didn't fall in. It was the Road Warriors were involved, Jimmy Garvin, Ronnie Garvin. So much nonsense. It was three cages stacked on top of each other. It was awful. They had to climb up these ladders, and everything's... they just did things.
Well, it was almost worse. In 2000, they had that... when WCW took that triple cage that they used in the frickin' movie and they brought it on to Nitro, and that was the new War Games match.
Oh, good Lord. I never saw it. I'm going to watch
it's
all these
pay-per-views
in chronological order, Dan.
It's on the War Games DVD, actually, the Nitro War Games with the triple cage. It's terrible.
Is that the one Canyon fell off of?
Yes, it is.
Well, there you go.
That was Slamboree that year, yeah.
There you go. Omega Squad, where can the fine people find you?
Follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, how about yourself?
Follow me on Twitter at Danwell83 and Obey the Puck at Obey Puck Show.
I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can also follow the official Twitter at HIC Talk Radio. You can also... follow the Facebook. It's facebook.com/HIAC Talk Radio. The website is HIACTalkRadio.com. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search for HIAC Talk Radio. And now, on the event of his 82nd birthday, here's
there
the outro. It's Johnny Cash. And have a good week.
Who say we cannot tell whether we are saved or whether all is well. They say we only can hope and trust that it is so. Well, I was there when it happened, and so I guess I ought to know. Hey, Porter, hey, Porter, would you tell me the time? How much longer I... 'cause when the lights have lost their glow, you'll cry, cry, cry. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, burns, burns. The ring of fire, the ring of fire. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they crucified my Lord?
Hotter than a pepper sprout. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. I'm going to Jackson.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison. And time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps
of the sleeping city sidewalk. And Sunday morning coming down. Well, you wonder why I always dress in black. Why you never see bright colors on my back. I got it one piece at a time. And it didn't cost me a dime. You'll know it's me when I come through your town. I'm gonna ride.
If I hadn't shot Bodine,
I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. Got the number 13 tattooed on my neck. Gonna break my rusty cage. The horse he kept running, the rider was dead. I hung my head, I hung my head. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand. I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Say hello to all the folks that I know and tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.